Welcome into the Echo Sports Report. I am Troy Olson, of course, by the man, the myth, the legend, Jeff Herr. We are going to take you through a little non-baseball stuff here to start off, and then we're going to roll right into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. And depending on how long this show goes, when Mike gets here, you may get this as a separate episode, or this may come as part of the Kansas City Baseball Vault this week. We'll decide that in post-production, but for now, we are going to go ahead and get started. First off, I'd like to welcome in Jeff. How are you doing?
I am fantastic, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. One thing we're going to talk about in greater detail later is it's been kind of a rough month for Kansas City sports, but where would you like to start off today?
Well, I think we'll start off with what I got going on back here, the Chiefs, which is partially covered by our somewhat hanging baseball vault sign, but yeah, and I feel like it's been 2 or 3 weeks since we've actually had an Echo Sports Report, like full-on show, kind of like this, just because scheduling conflicts and whatnot. But I mean, a lot has happened. You know, obviously the Chiefs didn't get off to a great start when we last had a show, so we still knew that. But I mean, things have gone from bad to worse, and not looking like it's going to pick up anytime soon. And I mean, it's just there's been. I mean, last week was just this firestorm, and it just kind of has really encapsulated just everything that's gone wrong, and not just with the Chiefs, but just with Kansas City in general. You know, I mean, we have such good fans, and for my money, for what we've put up with in Kansas City as fans of not only the Royals but the Chiefs, I mean, we've got to be the best fans in the entire country. You know, I mean, that might be overstating it a little bit, but we've got to be up there. You know, I mean, New York fans, there's more people and there's a lot of them, and same with Boston and whatnot. But, I mean, how many, you know, when the Yankees weren't very good in the 80s, I mean, they might, I'm not sure, I don't know, I wasn't old enough to know anything or whatever, so maybe they were still selling out like crazy and everybody still loved them. But, I mean, you know, for a city to not have a football team that has won a playoff game in 18 years. You know, only two other teams in the NFL have gone longer without winning a playoff game. And those teams, it's Detroit and Cincinnati, I believe, and their attendance and everything is doing okay now. But, I mean, if you go back to the late 90s, early 2000s with those teams, I mean, nobody cared. And there was just, you know, their fans were awful. But the Chiefs, I mean, we've been terrible for the last 5 years now. And people still show up. You know, we had the one good year where they made the playoffs, but outside of that, they've just been an awful organization, and they still sell out 95% of the games. And you look at, you know, last year with the Royals, and they had 25,000 people in September for a team that was 15 games out. And you had the same thing this year to a lesser extent. And people just keep showing up and keep showing up. And it's, you know, we put up with so much. But last week, to get back to my original point, was kind of a microcosm of everything. You know, everyone's so upset with Matt Cassel, with what happened. He was playing just awful in a game. And I kind of wrote my article for 610 about this, where you had what amounted to, if you ask me, what looked like some civil disobedience from Romeo Crennel. I mean, it's obvious at this point that Matt Cassel is in a position, I'm sorry, the Chiefs are in a position where they're stuck with Matt Cassel, and there is a mandate coming from above Romeo Crennel's head, i.e. Scott Pioli, that's saying, hey, play this guy. You don't have a choice. If you want a job, you want to play, you're playing Matt Cassel. And so that's what they're doing. And, you know, Romeo Crennel, I think, finally got to the point where he says, you know what, I don't believe in this guy. I don't want him to be my quarterback, but I have to because Scott Pioli's telling me I do. So we're not gonna have him throw the ball. We're gonna run the ball 60 times, and if we lose 50-10, whatever, you know, then let that be the case. I mean, he came out after the game and he said that he did it so that he could keep the game competitive, and that was his goal. But I don't think that was his goal. I think if things would have gotten out of hand, he would have kept going and not letting Matt Cassel throw the ball, and because he wanted to prove that he wanted to show some way that he wasn't happy with Matt Cassel as a quarterback. And you know, Matt Cassel only threw the ball 15 times. He left with about 5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. But he only threw the ball 15 times. He still threw two interceptions. I mean, the guy is just – now, One of those interceptions was a bad pass. It was high and behind Dwayne Bowe. The other pass was a good pass, so I can't put too much of that on him. It was just a straight drop by Dwayne Bowe, who has, for every bit of positivity that Dwayne Bowe has developed with the fan base for his franchise tag year, he's done just enough to, in my opinion, to differ. I mean, that's a different topic, but we won't get into that. But the biggest thing was when Matt Castle got hurt, and you heard the fans cheering, and Eric Winston comes out after the game, and Troy, I want to get your opinion on this. I've obviously seen some on Twitter, but and calls out the fans, which, you know, I mean, you don't want to call out fans of any city, but we have such this ingrained kind of civic pride in Kansas City that, just from what I know about other cities and what I've been to, you know, I think it's higher here than it is in a lot of cities, especially when it comes to our sports teams. So the last thing you want to do is attack the fans. You know, Elvis Gerbach did it, and he never recovered. So thankfully, Eric Winston's not the quarterback. He's just the right tackle, so we can kind of forget about him, you know. But he attacked the fans, said it's despicable, it's disgusting, all this stuff, and then it just blew up from there. It was Robinson Cano booing incident times 10. It was on SportsCenter. It was everywhere. It was, are the Chiefs fans right? You know, what happened to the Chiefs fans? I thought they were good people, and they look awful. And there was just this horrible backlash. And I had never really said too much about it. I was kind of working on a post for Echo Network, and I think I'm still going to try and get that out. I mean, it's kind of already blown over a little bit now, as people are just kind of over the whole thing. But I mean, you heard a lot of things where people said, "Oh, fans shouldn't have cheered. That was disgraceful," and I agreed with that. I don't think any fans should ever cheer any injury. But then, you know, 10 hours later, with the way the news cycle moves so quickly, you had this kind of reverse backlash where it was just like, oh, hey, well, the fans weren't really cheering for the injury of Matt Castle. Brady Quinn stepped on the field, and they were cheering for Brady Quinn. And it wasn't about that. They weren't cheering because Matt Castle was injured. They were cheering because we finally get the change that we've craved and all this stuff. And ultimately, it's just semantics. Here's the facts of the matter is that they cheered for Matt Castle when he was injured. And there are, you know, then there were people that after that whole second kind of backlash came, then there were people that kind of came back and said, oh, well, you know, the thought process was, well, Chiefs, you can't really deny that they cheered. But then it was like, well, it wasn't everybody. You know, it was just a few hundred fans. Well, I was there, and it was more than a few hundred fans, okay? Absolutely, 100% was not everybody. But, you know, I can't put a number on it. But to say it was just a few hundred fans, I think no. I mean, what happened was you had the Chiefs. Matt Castle throws a pass. Jamaal Charles gets a first down, and you had a cheer. And there was a secondary cheer that sounded – it was kind of that delay between when you would normally see like a long pass play, and there was a debate about whether it was pass interference, and the ref finally throws the flag, and you hear that kind of secondary roar. That's what it sounded like. And I looked around for the flag. I didn't know what was going on. And I didn't see anything. I said, what's that? I look over and I see there's an injured player. I couldn't even tell it was Matt Castle at first. And that's where the cheers came from, was that side of the field, because the other side of the field was looking at the play and didn't even notice. So, you know, I think it's not as cut and dry as just saying fans hated Matt Castle and that's why they were cheering him. But it's also not as easy to just say, oh, well, you know, fans weren't really cheering for Matt Castle to be injured, you know, because I think that they were. But I also think we got lost in the whole matter, too, is, you know, Matt Castle, there was the initial cheer, and then it kind of stopped, and then Matt Castle gets up a few minutes later, and everyone in the stadium, you know, that I will say was everyone, cheered for him. You know, and that was a real classy move, I think, by the Chiefs fans, because they know they wanted him out. You know, maybe some people were glad he was hurt. Maybe some weren't, and they just were misguided somehow. But you know, everybody cheered for him when he got up, and nobody ever mentioned that. You know, there were a few people I saw in the media that kind of talked about it, but for the most part, nobody mentioned that part about it. And then they cheered more when Brady Quinn came on. So, I mean, that was just the whole thing. And then with what Winston said afterwards, it's just a mess because it's just kind of, you know, the frustrations that the Chiefs have, and that, you know, to the same extent that the Royals have with the Royals organization, just this propensity for them to sit there and throw out these players that we just don't. They're just not who we need for these organizations. And sorry, my internet clicked out there for a second. I thought I might have lost the feed, but and the problem is now we're in a situation where Brady Quinn's going to come in. Brady Quinn's not the answer either, you know. And it's something where the Chiefs, it's going to take more than an injury. You know, the Chiefs have to look deeper, and they have to realize where the organizational flaws are. And one of them is, you know, the signing of Matt Cassel wasn't necessarily a terrible move. I didn't like the contract, but trading to get him was fine. It's just when, similar to Kyle Davies and Lou Koshaver and the rest, you know, when you continue to trot these guys out there and expect different results when we know who they are. You know, we know what they are and who they are, and they still do it. And then it comes to a head when he gets injured and the fan base is finally ready for some change. But you know what? I mean, it's a physical change. You know, it's like you dye your hair, but you're the same person. You know, it's the same kind of thing. It's even if Brady Quinn does better, I mean, I don't think we've seen the last of Matt Cassel in Kansas City. And I don't know that anything's going to change. I mean, what was your thoughts on the whole process when it came to, you know, fans cheering Matt Cassel's injury and all that kind of stuff?
Well, one thing that I've gotten crucified for over the last few years is I hate booing. I mean, booing the opponent's one thing, but when Hochever went out and gave up 5 runs in opening day and got booed, I hated that. I don't like it. It's just, I don't think it's classy. I don't think, you know, I don't care for the drunk heckling in the outfield. I don't think it's classy. And I you know, and maybe wearing tights and a cape to a baseball game isn't classy either, but it was sure in hell was a lot of fun. I suppose that's why people see what they do with what they do. And I honestly wasn't at the game.
If I may jump in just really quickly, I'll say that tights and a cape thing, I mean, it's in fun. Whether it's classy or not, who cares? You know, it's a positive element to the game. It's not booing, no matter what you say, whether you agree with it or not, is a negative element. So,
okay.
So to your point, just wanted to throw that in there. But continue.
Sure. You know, and the thing is, I would like to think that nobody out there booed Cassel getting hurt, but we know that's not true because, like you said, you were there, and these damn fools called into the radio stations all week and told that they were ones that booed. And if you're one of those people that are out there booing somebody who got hurt, you need to really check on your life because you've got something horribly wrong, because it's really quite that simple. It's unnecessary and uncalled for. Now, should we be happy that somebody other than Matt Cassel was the quarterback? Yes. Should we be happy that he got up and walked off the field? Absolutely. There should have been a huge roar for that. And should have we booed Robinson Cano? Absolutely. And I have no problem with that. I never did. I was one of the people that were booing. Lost my voice doing it, man. I mean, but I would have never booed a player down in the field. I like I said, I wouldn't even boo Lou Koshaver when he gave up 5 runs. And I mean, you pay for your ticket, sure, it's your prerogative. But you're not sticking it to the team. You're not showing the team anything. You're just showing that you have a lack of class. And if you really want to show the team, don't show up. That's how you fix that. And I know it's a lot of fun to be out there, but I did not renew my season tickets next year because I don't believe in this organization and for the Royals. And the same goes for the Chiefs. We're to a point now, and a couple of things that you hit on, but I didn't want to interrupt you because you were on such a roll. But, you know, you talk about that there's civil disobedience from the coaching staff for the Chiefs against Pioli. Well, now that absolutely tells you where your problem is because, you know, Pioli hired both of these coaches that he's had in here, correct? I mean, nobody else has done it but Pioli. And this is the second time that he started to have problems like this. Todd Haley and Pioli it was noted how big of problems they had. So obviously he can't judge people, which means he can't be a good GM because he couldn't judge the kind of problems he was going to have with the first coach, Todd Haley. And now here he is with Romeo Crennel, a guy that I thought was going to be a great head coach in Cleveland, wasn't. And I was willing to give another chance here in Kansas City. And I'm still, you know, jury's out on him, whatever. But But Pioli can't get along with people. He's had these two coaches, and neither one seemed to be doing kind of what he wanted. I mean, Crennel wanted a different quarterback in here.
He wanted to keep Brady Quinn.
He wanted Brady Quinn, but also he did not.
He wanted to keep Kyle Orton. I'm sorry.
I think if we would have had if Romeo would have had his way, your quarterback club this year would have been Castle because you're stuck with the money, Brady Quinn because that was the first draft pick that Romeo ever had, and you would have had Orton. And there would have been a true competition in the preseason, and you would have had three legitimately, you know, playable NFL quarterbacks. Because let's get real, he might be funny and he might and all that, but our third string quarterback is not a legitimate quarterback. And if you're counting on guys that are currently on the IR, but if you're counting on a guy that made a YouTube video to be your quarterback, your team's in a lot of trouble. So as far as the booing and stuff goes, let's just let it rest. At this point, we've heard it on the radio. Fesco, who's absolutely one of my favorites, is just killing it this week because in a bad way, because now he's got the Winston interview all chopped up and he drops it in at random times and it's just over. Let it go. What Winston did was not the best method, but he was fired up. And I've said some pretty nasty things fired up. And fortunately, there's not always a microphone in front of me. And even some of my tweets have gotten blasted that I've said in a fired up mood. But people, national reporters can go to hell. I don't care what they think. This is Kansas City. And if people don't want to come to Kansas City because they think we're a bunch of buttheads, let them be. I love my city. I love my town.
I absolutely agree with you. And why don't you go ahead and talk about I saw you got in kind of a Twitter thing about the whole Jeff Passan situation. Why don't you go ahead and run that down for us?
Jeff Passan's a piece of shit. That's where I'm going with that. That man is supposed to be from this town. He is supposed to live here. And he has done nothing but run us down since the Robinson Cano situation. You know, you got Greg Doyle out there that's saying how classy Kansas City fans are. He made a tweet a while back. In fact, if I can bring it up here real quick, Danny Parkins retweeted it and I favorited it. But he talked about how because of us standing up for Robinson Cano, or not Robinson Cano, for Miguel Cabrera, you know, it was a classy move. Scott M. CBS, it's a sign of what a great baseball town Kansas City is. 12,000 tickets were sold early. Crowd tonight, 30,383 in reference to that game. And then Greg Doyle followed up with great sports town. And Greg Doyle is absolutely correct. And I'm biased. We've had Greg Doyle on this show, and he's very nice and not at all the person you would expect from his articles, at least when I dealt with him. And I think there is a sentiment out there that we're a positive sports town. There's also sentiment out there that we're a negative sports town, and it's partly earned. The Castle thing really hurt us. But for Jeff Passan, who's supposed to be one of us, to go out and say the things he does, to say we need anger management, I only need anger management when I have to listen to Jeff Passan, because he makes me want to punch somebody, preferably him. So, yes, if I need anger management, it's because of Jeff Passan. And I can't stand the guy, and every time 610 has him on the radio, I'm going up the dial. I'm going to 810. And if they have him on, I'm gone for the rest of their show. And I love 610. There's only one guy on 610 that I can't stand, and that's J.C. Pearson. And regardless of that, I will always listen to the Big Show because that's our boy. I mean, that's three guys in a garage. You know, that's Jay Binkley. And I will always be loyal to Binkley because of all that he's done for us, for me especially, but even for this show and helping us, giving me suggestions on how to launch it and stuff. But I think as Kansas City fans, we just cannot – we can't feed into this. We can't care what the national media says for one thing. Let's be Kansas City. We're never going to be New York. Oh, and on the New York point, they weren't selling out this year, let alone when they were bad in the 80s. They weren't selling out games this year. You can go to New York any year during the Royal Series or during if the Pirates were in town or any of the other bad teams – and there are plenty of seats. You can get $20 seats for a Royals game at the Yankee Stadium. And so do people go to Yankee games to see the Yankees, or are they going for the visiting team? Because they're going for the Yankees. They should sell out every game regardless of who they're playing. They should sell more on teams that they're going to thump. Because as a home team fan, I love to see my team go out there and win a game by 10 runs. Nothing better. Hit home runs. Yay! You know, but I'm just over it. I'm over all of it. It's gone on for far too long since last Sunday. I hope the team goes out this week and does well and all that so that we can talk about Brady Quinn being the starting quarterback versus Matt Castle. And then in 2 weeks, we can talk about how bad Brady Quinn is, because let's be real, he's not a good quarterback, not good enough to be a starter in the NFL. But again, that's on Pioli. He's passed up plenty of opportunities. He had a chance to take Russell Wilson, who isn't a great quarterback, but he's a starter in the NFL, and he's a much better quarterback than either of the two we have. You know, he had a chance to keep Orton, who isn't as good as Romo, who isn't very good, but is better than Matt Castle. So, you know, Orton would be a better starter here than Matt Castle. It would be like going from a B quarterback to a B-plus quarterback at best, but it would be an improvement. But we as fans, we need to be better. And this is my opinion. I know there's plenty of views out there, but I do think we can be better. And I don't think we should – I don't think we should boo our own. I don't think we should definitely ever boo an injury on either team. Nobody should ever be booed when they're hurt. I've seen some drastic sports injuries in my time. You know, I saw somebody get taken away in an ambulance calling a high school football game last night. That's scary stuff. Those are real people out there. And yes, they're high paid people and they're out there to entertain us, but I think we've lost a little bit of our humanity the last few years.
No, and I agree, you know, to hit on a couple of your points. I mean, I think the idea of – I'm going to differ a little bit on your stance of booing, where I think performance-wise, you know, you can – I don't have a problem with booing somebody because, you know, they're – I mean, it's no different than, you know, in our jobs. I mean, we all have performance reviews, and they tell us how good or bad we are and stuff like that. So, I mean – you know, obviously Matt Castle should be getting evaluated by his coaching staff and his general managers and all that stuff, but, you know, we don't have fans at our normal job, so it's a little bit of a different element. But I think booing someone for performance is okay. But I agree with the injury, then you start – when you start cheering injuries or things like that, then it kind of crosses that line from going over to, you know, booing the play to booing the person, because an injury – has nothing to do with how good or bad he is. Typically, you know, it's just a circumstance. And so, you know, the worst part about it is you have this situation where I think universally everyone's going to agree, whether they like Matt Castle or not, as a football player, as a person, he's a great guy. I have just, you know, you've never heard one person say a bad thing about Matt Castle. He's always generous with autographs. He's always great with fans. My dad's met him a couple times and says that he's just super nice. He'll sit there and he'll talk to you for a few minutes just like you're anybody else. You know, he doesn't think he's any better than anybody and all that. So, I mean, hands down, Matt Castle is by all accounts a great guy. He's just not a very good quarterback, you know, and that's, you know, it is what it is. You can boo that, his quarterback play, but when it gets down to him being an injured person on the field, you know, he's not going to play football for the rest of his life, and, you know, that's going to be with him for the rest of his days. He's going to be that guy. He's going to be like, hey, you know, I was out there. I'm not going to play a violin for Matt Castle, but he's saying, you know, I'm out there. I'm giving it all I got. I'm in this situation. You know, they didn't have to pay me $60 million, but I took it, and you know, now they're booing me when I'm injured, and the injury wasn't even my fault. You know, it was Eric Winston's fault, who's the guy who's trying to blast all the fans now. And so it's just something where it's just that is not good. You don't want to cross that line to where you're starting to lose, you know, kind of why we're here in the first place. Why are we here? Because we're here to watch the Chiefs play, here to be fans. And being a fan is the name on the jersey, is the logo on the helmet and on the jersey and playing for all that. That's what being a fan is, but there's also people underneath those logos, and that's what you can't lose sight of. And, you know, it's not just here in Kansas City. I think a lot of places have, and it's just kind of the way the sports culture is gone, and it's an unfortunate reality, but, it is something that can be changed and probably should be, because – like you said, you don't want to get past that. And to hit on the Jeff Passan point, you know, I always kind of liked Jeff Passan. I thought he was kind of knowledgeable. He's very knowledgeable about when it comes to baseball and things like that and just sports in general. But, you know, he's kind of smug on the radio, and he's guest hosted a couple times. And I texted him before a few times when he was on the host, and he's not very tactful. He's kind of got that almost kind of shock jock type of thing going on whenever he's on the radio. And the Boo Cano thing, I thought he was misguided, which he didn't really understand because, like you said, he's from here. I believe he wrote for the Kansas City Star, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so, I think so.
Yeah, and so he's got some history here. It's not like he's unfamiliar with us as fans and how we work. So to see him with the Robinson Cano thing was a little disheartening. And then, to be honest, I have not heard I can't listen to sports radio anymore. When I'm at work, I can't stream it off my computer, and it'll just run up my data plan on my phone. So I haven't been able to listen to as much sports talk radio since I got my new job as I once was. So I got to admit, I have not heard exactly everything that Jeff Passan said on the radio this week. But I can imagine from his tweets and different things and what you've said, you know, what it's like. And it's just, you know, I think kind of like you, I'm just kind of done with Jeff Passan and his whole little shtick here. You know, he knows what it's like to be here in Kansas City. He knows what it's like for us fans. He knows what we've been going through. And, you know, I'm kind of on the side of not making excuses for the fans because there were fans out there that were cheering for Matt Cassel's injury. So I'm not over there on that camp making excuses for him. But I'm also not going to say it's as cut and dry as someone like, oh, they need anger management issues and Kansas City fans are classless and baseless and they don't know what the hell they're doing or cheering about. I mean, I think that's ridiculous when you get to that. I mean, I think we're some of the most knowledgeable fans of both football and baseball in the entire country. And I think we're some of the classiest. And obviously I'm biased just like you. I mean, I'm from here. I live here. I love this town. And so, of course, I'm going to be a little bit biased. But like I said, I'm not making excuses for the fans that cheered Cassel's injury because they were out there. And I don't think that you should do that. You know, I said it on Twitter after the game. I said I thought it was ridiculous. I agreed with Winston's sentiment, not necessarily his exact words, but I agreed with his sentiment. And I said, you know, I don't think that should have occurred. But for Jeff Passan to come up and just say, oh, you know, Chiefs fans booed Matt Cassel's injury because they're classless and they like to boo injuries, they like to see pain or whatever the hell he said.
They need anger management.
Yeah, it's off base. It's completely and utterly off base. You know, I mean, there's a lot of frustration built up in the city. I won't deny that. But I don't know that it's ever clouded people's judgment. You know, I think when it comes to, I mean, if we're really that angry and we're really that cloudy, it's the Miguel Cabrera thing. You know, would we have cheered him? Probably not. You know, I mean, it's everything got so mashed together and misconstrued, and Jeff Passan was right in the middle of it. And it was just really disheartening to see someone who's from this town, who lives here, who knows day in and day out kind of the stuff we have to put up with as sports fans, and still went on and perpetuated this just media firestorm that got completely out of hand. So, and to that point, I think you're completely right, and I'm kind of getting to that point where I'm done with the whole Jeff Passan thing because I don't know. He's a very, very good, very talented writer. I don't know why he has to get up and say these things like this and be on this one, you know, extreme side. It's not like he needs Twitter followers. It's not like he needs people to read his articles. He's a good writer. He knows his stuff.
He's brilliant. He is brilliant.
Exactly. And, I mean, Yahoo Sports is, from a pure sports reporting standpoint, you know, Yahoo Sports got everybody beat right now. And, I mean, they've got, you know, Jeff Passan and Dan Wetzel and, oh, God, who's the guy that he did the Miami thing? Or Charles,
I don't know.
The guy that does those big investigative reports that they have that are just phenomenal. And, you know, they've got Pat Forty now. And it's just, you know, their sports reporting is better than anybody's, if you ask me. And he has no need to do this stuff, and yet he gets up there and does it. And it doesn't make sense to me.
I guess my thing is, he's so smart. And when we first started doing this podcast, he was like on my A-list of people I wanted. And I could never get the guy to respond to a tweet or anything else. And he's so pretentious.
I don't think he comes on any podcast.
I don't think so either. And I think they're below him, and he doesn't follow anybody but his own book. I mean, you're really the only person, you're going to use Twitter just as a broadcast mechanism. I guess that's okay, but I think it loses some of the touch of what makes Twitter great. You don't want to have conversation. You know, you don't want to follow like Nick Wright or other people that you work with or do work with that, you know, you could easily chat with and stuff like that. I just, I'm just over it. I'm over all of it, and I really don't want to. I'm done with this conversation on my side of it, because it's just it's beat up, and we're just to a point where, as fans, we can do better. And if we do, we do. If we don't, we don't. And the future will hold. But, you know, I think living in the Midwest, I love living in the Midwest. I used to live in Colorado, and Greg gives me a hard time because I talk a lot about going back to Colorado. I'd like to go back to Colorado because the weather's amazing, and my dad's got a house there, and I could move into his basement cheap, and you can make a lot more money in Colorado. And so I would love to go back to Colorado for that aspect, but I don't miss Colorado because I don't miss the people. I don't miss the jerk attitude that's out there. I don't miss the Boulder types. I don't miss, you know, the pretentiousness. I don't miss the rush and full out go, go, go of a Denver area. I don't miss that at all. I love it here. You know, we have 8 or 9 different ways to get to any location in this town. If there's a traffic jam on I-70, you jump, or if there's a traffic jam in 670, you jump off and take I-70 and come around on 35, you know? If there's a jam getting in the Northland, you alternate between 35 and 29, or you take one of the highways, like 71 or something, you know? And you can get to places. And I love this town. And we have great people. I always tell people Kansas City is the largest small town you'll ever be in. And it's just fantastic. I love this city. And I have no desire, outside of like weather or moving somewhere for financial reasons, I really have no desire to live anywhere else than where I am right now in Kansas City, because we have something special here. And I just hope that, because we're so beaten as sports fans, that we don't lose that. And that's my only fear.
Yeah. it's Charles Robinson is the name of the guy I was thinking of.
That's right.
For Yahoo Sports. But yeah, I mean, I don't think we need to go into it anymore. Pretty much summed it up there. So, I guess we, I mean, to kind of wrap up some of the Chiefs stuff, I mean, Brady Quinn is, he's going to start against the Buccaneers here on Sunday. Here's how this is going to go. There's going to be one of two things that are going to happen. And based on my Chiefs history, here's my hypothesis of what I think is going to happen, okay? Because let's be honest, we've seen this before. We've been down this road. So here's what's going to happen. Brady Quinn's going to come in, going to play a subpar team in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They're going to win the game. He's going to look pretty good. And next thing you know, his confidence is going to start to build. The team's going to start to rally around him. They're going to kind of get on the upswing a little bit. They may make 8 or 9 games. They might make the playoffs. They might be just short, whatever. And, you know, Matt Castle is going to come back, and it's going to be this huge controversy. And they're going to stick with Brady Quinn. They're going to make a declarative choice, and they're going to go into the offseason. They're going to say, hey, we got Brady Quinn. He performed well last year. Nearly brought us to the playoffs. They're going to come in next season. Next thing you know, Brady Quinn hadn't played in 2 years, and nobody had any film on him, and so he was a little bit successful, and nobody had any recent film on him, and so he was kind of successful. But now they've got nearly a whole year's worth of film on him as a Chief and the Chief system, and so in 2013, he's going to turn back into Brady Quinn again, and the Chiefs are going to have gone another offseason without drafting a quarterback, and they're going to be in exactly the same spot as they were this year. I mean, that's what I think is going to happen, because we've seen it before. We saw it in 97 with Rich Gannon and Elvis Gerbach. Rich Gannon came in. They decided not to stick with – I mean, it's a little bit different, but it's kind of similar where, you know, they decided not to stick with Rich Gannon, and they went back to Elvis Gerbach, and then Rich Gannon left, went on to be a 4-time Pro Bowler, MVP, take his team to the Super Bowl. Then we saw it in 06 when Trent Green got hurt. Damon Heward came in, did really well. Then Trent Green, they started him for the playoff game, which they lost. They let Trent Green go. They traded him away, and they made Damon Heward the starting quarterback coming in. That was the year they were on Hard Knocks, and they made Damon Heward the starting quarterback coming in the next year, and he bombed. And it was one of the worst years in Chiefs history. And, I mean, we're setting up for the same kind of thing. We've seen this before, and that's the way it's going to go. And it's a new regime. You know, it's not Carl Peterson like it was for those two times. But, God, it's, you know, it doesn't matter. It seems like, for whatever reason, and the Royals have the same kind of thing, too, where the no matter the regime, it just seems like there are just these organizational flaws that are in there. And the only common place you can look to is the owners. And, you know, in the Chiefs' case, it's Clark Hunt. And just like with the Royals and David Glass, I don't see any accountability. You know, I imagine what happened after Matt Cassel gets booed, or I mean gets cheered for his injury. I imagine what happened is they say, you know what, Clark Hunt meets Pioli in his office after the game, and they just say, hey, you know, you and me, Scott, it's you and me against the world. We got to make this thing work. We got to prove everybody wrong, you know. And that's the feeling I get from those two, and that's not how it should be. You know, if Clark Hunt is going to be hands-off and he's going to live in Dallas and he's going to do whatever he's going to do and come in once a week and pretend to be a Kansas City owner, that's fine. You don't have a problem. I don't think it's the owner has to live here.
Save that thought. Let me stop you there. Save that thought, because as soon as Mike gets here, that's how we're starting the next show. So okay. we're talking exactly about that whole conversation. That's why I kind of have this as one show, because we're going to merge right from ESR into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, and that's one of the first things we're going to talk about. Okay. Is this whole conversation about owners that live away, because it applies to both of our quote-unquote pro teams.
Okay, well, I'll skip my thoughts on that for now, but if he's going to live in Dallas, then and be hands-off, it cannot be him and the GM against the world. It's got to be him coming in and saying, Scott Pioli, get into my office today. Listen, this is unacceptable. This is not an acceptable way I run this franchise. You know, my father's name is on the AFC Championship trophy, and ever since his name was put on there, we've never held it up. That's got to change. So we need this. You know, you need to be better. You need to be better than what you're doing. You need to fix this. And if it takes more money, you know, it takes more money. Well, he probably wouldn't say that part. But what he needs to say is exactly that. He needs to hold him accountable. He needs to say, Scott, this is your problem. You need to figure this out. And if you don't, then it's your ass. And I have no faith whatsoever for both organizations that either owner would say that to their GMs. And that is the ultimate flaw in the organization. That's what it is right there. And, you know, it's not going to change. So, I mean, one of these organizations is just going to have to get lucky, really.
Well, and I think the Royals have – I mean, the minor league system in baseball is pretty incredible, and it's important for your major league teams. We've seen it all over with your precious Rays and the people that have come up through there, and, you know, the Reds even to an extent, and a lot of these other teams. You've seen, you know, the Pirates were pretty good this year for a good portion of the season, and it's all because of – the Nationals, another great example, although they have spent quite a bit of money too. But, I mean, yeah, a great example. You know, the whole thing is we just, as a city, we deserve better than the teams we're getting. We're going to get into that when we get into the whole conversation about them not living here, I think. But it's just the thing about spending money, and I do want to hit on this, for the Chiefs, is pretty important, because when Drew Brees comes out and says, we've got to have football that where the majority of the cities aren't like Kansas City, where they don't spend like Kansas City. And that's why they got the 90% floor. So they have to spend this money anyways. They just need to spend it right, and they need to be smart about it and spend what's necessary. And if you need to spend an extra 5 to 10% of that salary cap, as long as you're not putting yourself into a position where you can't compete 2 or 3 years down the road, it needs to happen. And yeah. There's plenty of money being made.
And to that point, I mean, this whole salary cap issue and spending thing, it's not exactly cut and dry. And there's multiple sides to it. And there's the angle of, well, the Chiefs have the most salary cap room over the last 4 years than any other team in football. And that's the narrative that's going on. I'll have to research those numbers and see. I know they're definitely in the top five as far as salary cap room for the last 4 years, but I don't know if they're the most. But anyway, that's beside the point. You know, they have plenty of money to spend salary cap-wise, but then the Chiefs, you hear their angle, and they say, cash spending. We've spent, you know, we're right in the middle of the pack or the top half of the league when it comes to cash spending, which is what they actually pay their players. And I think that's an important distinction, but only to a certain extent. You know, I think it's what the cash spending as Sam, and this is not my thought. This is, I heard Sam Mellinger say this when he was on 610 a couple weeks ago. The cash spending shows us that Clark Hunt is not cheap, but the cap room space shows us that he could spend a lot more money. So there it is. That's kind of, you know, I think that was, I really like that quote from Mellinger, because I think that really kind of encapsulated exactly what we're dealing with here in a situation where, you know, if you're Clark Hunt, you're sitting up there, you're saying, I'm spending money, you know, I'm not cheap. It's not like I'm, you know, and it's true. The evidence is out there. You know, they paid $50 million to Tom Valle. They paid $50 million for Brandon Flowers. You know, Eric Berry's making $40 million. So they've spent money, and he's sitting there saying, you know, oh, I've spent a lot of money. It's like, well, you could spend more. You know, you have – that's where that comes in of does he want to run a business or does he want to win football games? Because if he wants to win football games, he's going to take every red cent that he can, and he's going to spend it on making his team better. But he's not. So that's why you have to question if he is a businessman or if he's a football owner. And right now he's a businessman. And there's nothing that has, in his 5 years of ownership, there's nothing that's convinced me anything otherwise. And until that changes, you know, this team is not going to be a winning football team.
Right. Just a quick note. I just happened to bring up ESPN because I've seen some interesting conversation on Twitter as I've been popping into it just to see what's kind of going on today. I don't know if you've seen this score or not, but I believe it's called the Red River Shootout. Oklahoma is dusting Texas 29-2.
Oh.
Three minutes left in the second quarter. That's insane. Do you want to talk any about college football? The most to talk about in the Kansas City area is KSU, and they are currently leading 17-14 on Iowa State at Iowa State.
I was just going to say, this might be a good transition to college football, but the only team I really think is worth talking too much about is K-State. I might try and pull up their schedule here, but without it in front of me, I mean,
I can get it right now.
What are the odds that we're looking that K-State can go undefeated? I think, because who's left from the Big 12 that can give them problems?
TCU. TCU, if they get their quarterback back. I think a shootout very much favors TCU over KSU, even though Klein is awesome. I don't know if he could keep up the pace that we've seen from TCU if they have all their players and everything. West Virginia, same reasoning.
Here's the rest of their schedule, if I may jump in. They've got Iowa State today, which you said they're leading 17-14. They got West Virginia next week in West Virginia. West Virginia is the number 5 ranked team in the country. KSU is number 6. So that's your game of the year right there. That is it. That is going to probably decide the Big 12 one way or another. Then after that, they've got Texas Tech at home, who is not a good football team. Oklahoma State at home, who is they're good. They're a good program, but they've got a freshman quarterback right now. That's a game that I think if you're a Bill Snyder coach team, that's winnable. TCU and TCU, which you said if they can get Casey Paja back, that might be, I think I'm pronouncing that name right, but if they can get their quarterback back, that might be a little bit tough, but I still think they can win that game. Baylor is not who they were without Robert Griffin III. And then their last game of the season against Texas at home, and you might be a little bit worried about Texas unless what you just said, Oklahoma is just stroking them 29-2 right now. And the fact that Kansas State has owned Texas in football and basketball the last, 5, 6, 7 years? They've just owned Texas.
Which is why I feel that that's a bit of a trap game. If K-State's undefeated going into that game, I think K-State fans need to be on the edge of their seat because that's the kind of game that I could see any team not taking a shot at K-State by any means, because I think K-State's fantastic and I want them to win the whole dang thing. I want them to win the national championship. But if they get into that Texas game undefeated, they better be ready, because that's the kind of game you lose.
No, I normally I'd agree with you if it wasn't for Bill Snyder. Like, there is no one that I will give the benefit of the doubt to more than Bill Snyder in all sports, and no one has earned it more, if you ask me. I mean, the dude is just a phenomenal football coach, and if they're 11-0 going into the last game of the season against Texas, At home, I find it really hard. And looking at this schedule, the Baylor game is on November 17th, and Texas game is on December 1st. They have 2 weeks to prepare for that game. If they're 11-0 and they're going into that game, I have no doubt that any team in the country would be as prepared as Kansas State would be because of Bill Snyder. Now, I mean, maybe I'm giving him too much credit. I don't think I am, but I mean, I think he's earned that much. So if they're undefeated, I'd have faith that he could make that work against Texas. But, you know, I think West Virginia and TCU, like you said, those are your big battles there. Can they stop West Virginia's offense? And at TCU, I mean, that's just going to be a tough place to play. They're a good football team. That might be your trap game, really, because TCU might be unranked right now or when they play. But then maybe things will kind of change a little bit, and they'll get a little bit healthier than what they are, and they'll kind of develop some of their young players. And, hey, Mike. Hey, we're finishing up our thoughts here on K-State. But maybe TCU gets a little – so that might be your ultimate trap game right there, if you ask me.
Well, and I think it's going to be interesting. I want K-State to win the whole thing. I honestly want Mizzou to really show up today and somehow beat Alabama. I see that looking a lot like the Oklahoma-Texas score, unfortunately, for Mizzou. But I think it'll be interesting to see tonight. And KU's awful, and Nebraska's awful, and Pelini needs fired. I would give anything for him to be fired. And it's hard right now as a sports fan in Kansas City. And I think on that note, we're going to take a quick break because I think I'm going to go – or actually, we're going to go ahead and wrap this show. I'm going to go ahead and post this one separately because it did end up going a pretty good length. So we'll wrap this show. And then those of you watching live, we're coming right back with the Kansas City Baseball Vault on this feed right here. So stay with us on YouTube, youtube.com/RoyalManReport. We'll be right back in just a minute.